Good evening. Welcome to your Friday Night Live. It's philosophy time on the 6th of February, 2026. It's a perfect month. It's a Minecraft square of a month. So you're happy to take your bad audio on X, good audio on Rumble. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm using a Bluetooth mic with X, so I don't know what it does in the innards. There, I can try turning that up a little, see if that helps. I can also try moving it, I suppose. Well, no, it shouldn't matter if I move it closer because this microphone is going through X. So sorry if it's a little hard to hear. It'll be fixed in post. And a good evening. So nice to see you. Good evening. Welcome. Couple of items of business. Yes, that's right. March, Atlantic City. I'm going to be doing a debate back out into the world. Staffbot is wilding. Staffbot has been released to the Gen Pop, and I will be out there kissing babies and pressing the flesh with philosophy fans, and I look forward to seeing you there. Word War Debate, wordwardebate.com. They'll be putting stuff out there as a whole. So I hope to see you there. All right, shop.freedomain.com, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. You know, and I think it'll be live streamed. Yeah, it's the same thing that Anna Kasparian and Pearl Davis, H. Pearl Davis, Pearly Things, were doing a debate, as will I. Studio band is over. We're back on the road. Yeah, the mic is good on YouTube. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's still a little hairy for some reason on X. I tried asking AI how to set it up better. I followed everything, but it's tough to test. All right. So, a little bit of information about crime. Over the 11th to 18th centuries, the death penalty became hugely prevalent in Europe, eventually being used to punish most violent and property crimes, and leading to about 2% of each generation being executed. The best data on this comes from England. Why? Why is England such a polite society? Oh, excuse me. Oh, if you wouldn't mind. Oh, that's a bit much, isn't it? Oh, would you mind? Well, from 1500 to 1750, in England, the murder rate dropped from about 40 per 100,000 to 0.5 to 2 per 100,000. So that's a 20 to 80 times, not percent, times reduction. Capital punishment, or being sent to Australia and learning how to say meow. It's always like an airplane going past. Would you like something for breakfast? Meow. Capital punishment plucked the crime genes from the gene pool, particularly in regard to serious crimes like homicide, robbery, rape, etc. Hangings worked, crime mostly disappeared, and it was wonderful, as they could focus on high culture rather than insanity and evil. Then they lost their spines in the 20th century, and so on. Undid all that hard work. Hey, man, come on. Criminals' lives matter, too. They don't want any of this nasty execution stuff. And this is Landshark. That was from a tweet by Will Tanner. Landshark on X said, it's genuinely crazy that there is basically zero downsides to executing violent criminals. And if you just keep doing it again and again, society eventually effectively turns into paradise, but we can't actually do it because leftists still control all governments and legal systems. So I thought that's interesting. And again, happy to take calls, questions, to type them in here. Big brain psychology. And I'm really ambivalent about this. So I'm very happy to hear your thoughts about this as a whole. My bitter Anglo-Saxon vengeful side. It doth not sit well in this with me. But as always, I am, like Prince Charles, all ears and happy to hear. In 1980, political scientist Robert Axelrod, I guess he just briefly missed out on a career as a wrestler, Robert Axelrod invited the world's top strategists to a competition. The goal, find the single best decision-making strategy for life. The winner stunned everyone. Axelrod designed a tournament based on the Prisoner's Dilemma, a situation where two people benefit from cooperating, but each has an incentive to betray the other. The Prisoner's Dilemma, of course, is, two people are caught for a crime, or the police think that there's a crime, and they say to one person, if you confess to the crime, you'll get a quarter of the punishment of the other person, right? You'll get 2 years, they'll get 8 years. But if they confess and implicate you, you get 8 years and they get 2 years, or something like that. And of course, if they both hold fast, if neither of them confesses, then they both walk. But if one confesses, right? So 8 years, 2 years free, that's sort of the prisoner's dilemma. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on X. I did do a recording. I don't know what it's broadcasting from the preamp to X on Bluetooth. So sorry, we'll just have to do our best. So the rules of this competition are simple. If both cooperate, you get 3 points each. One defects, one cooperates. The defector gets 5, cooperator gets 0. Both defect, 1 point each. Each program played 200 rounds against every other program. Highest total score wins. 14 programs were submitted from leading theorists worldwide. Each designed to maximize its own score by any means necessary. Some were cunning, probing for weakness and exploiting it. Others mixed in random betrayals to confuse opponents. Many were calculating, aggressive, and complex. Axelrod ran the tournament, then ran it again five times over. The same winner emerged every time. Tit for tat. This is not offering up your breasts to be inked, but one of the simplest programs submitted. This is the whole strategy. And tell me what you think about this. One, start by cooperating. Right? So you can also think of this another way this has been done is if you sort of think of a bunch of prison cells that they have little holes to each other. You can pass things through. You could pass a cigarette and get a piece of candy or something like that. But you can't pass both at the same time. So you have to trust someone. If someone says, hey man, I'll give you a cigarette for a piece of candy, you push the piece of candy through the hole, they have to decide to give you the cigarette. They could just keep the candy, right? So you can sort of think of it like that in terms of the trade stuff that's more permanent. Or this could be sort of like online, somebody says, I want you to send me the money and then I'll send you, X, Y, and Z good or something like that. You send them the money, hopefully they send you the good. So one, start by cooperating. Two, copy your opponent's last move. If they defect, if they don't hold up their end of the bargain, defect back immediately. The moment they cooperate again, forgive and cooperate. That's it. So start by cooperating, copy your opponent's last move. If they defect or cheat, cheat back immediately or refuse to cooperate back immediately. The moment they cooperate again, forgive and cooperate. That's it. Axelrod ran a second tournament, 62 programs entered. To mirror real life, games now ended at random. No one knew which round would be their last. Tit for tat won again. But here's the most counterintuitive part. Tit for tat never beat a single opponent head to head. It could only tie or lose. Yet across all matchups, it accumulated the highest score, right? So, of course, in life, we're dealing with a 360 centrifuge of people. So it never beat a single opponent head-to-head. It could only tie or lose. Yet across all matchups, it accumulated the highest total score. Why? Axelrod identified four traits that made it unbeatable. One, nice. It never defected first. Two, retaliatory. It punished betrayal immediately. Forgiving, it restored. Three, forgiving, it restored cooperation the moment an opponent did. And four, clear, opponents understood its pattern and chose to cooperate. Meanwhile, nasty strategies dragged each other into defection wars, destroying themselves in the process. In messier simulations, an even more forgiving tit-for-tat emerged. It occasionally forgave defections without retaliating and outperformed the original. So Axelrod wrote in The Evolution of Cooperation, what makes it possible for cooperation to emerge is the fact that the players might meet again. The real world lessons. Leading with cooperation isn't weakness. It's the most effective long-term strategy. What have I said? What have I said? Lo, these many, many moons, these many, many decades. start out being as nice as possible. Start out by being as nice as possible. That's my life. I approach everything with a giant grin, a handshake, a hug, a bon ami, a happiness, a joke. Yay, great to meet you. That's my life. Start off as positive and cooperative as possible. So leading with cooperation isn't weakness. It's the most effective long-term strategy. Holding grudges weakens you. Forgiveness strengthens you. But no consequences guarantees exploitation. But no consequences. Sorry, that's a bit badly written. But if you have there are no consequences, it means you're going to get exploited. The optimal approach, be kind, be clear, be forgiving, but never be a pushover. A strategy obsessed with winning every interaction often loses overall. One focused on sustained cooperation wins. And I will put the source to this, but this is not what I've said. So I've said the first part. I want to sort of explain what I mean, and happy to get your thoughts and comments on this. So I've always said the first part, be nice. It's funny, you know, because this is, and maybe it's a British way, an Anglo-Saxon way, maybe it's a bit of a white way that white people are very nice until we're not, and then we're very not nice, right? And the reason for that is if I'm, you know, positive, friendly, cooperative, and helpful, and then somebody exploits me, then they're dead to me because I know I haven't done anything wrong. That's the nice thing about starting out friendly is, you know, it's not on you if something goes badly. But I don't agree, and I'll tell you why. I don't agree with restoring cooperation the moment an opponent does. And what he said, what makes it possible for cooperation to emerge is the fact that the players might meet again. So my question is always, when people talk about this kind of stuff, my question is always, are they talking about a small, fixed social situation? So I agree if, let's take a wild theoretical for me. A wild, pulling it out of my armpit theoretical. Let's say that your brother betrays you, you know, Cain and Abel style, maybe not that bad. Your brother betrays you. Now, if you are committed to continuing to see your brother, then forgiveness is really your only way forward. Because you're going to keep seeing him. If you are locked into some sort of 5-year business lease and you have problems with your landlord, well, you're locked in for 5 years. Forgiveness would make some sense, right? And so in relationships where you are locked in, then to me, it makes sense to do the forgiveness thing. However, if you are not locked into relationships, if you practice voluntary association, true freedom of association extends to everyone, right? So if you practice voluntary freedom of association, then forgiveness doesn't make much sense at all. You know, if you, for instance, if you're doing business with someone and it's the first time you're doing business with them and they are, I don't know, like overseas or something, right? You want to order something from Thailand and you send the money and they don't send you anything. Why would you try to cooperate again? Like, because he's saying, well, if they cheat, you cheat back. But if they stop cheating, then you forgive them. Again, that's for small towns. That's for family units. Or if you're in a marriage and getting divorced for some reason is completely destructive, acid mitosis or whatever. If all of that's happening, then sure, it makes sense to forgive. If you are locked in a prison cell with someone and they wrong you, then you've got a 10-year sentence and you're going to cheek by jowl mashed in together. Yeah, it makes sense. Then you've got to forgive them because you're stuck with them. And so the prisoner's dilemma generally is to do with repetitive trading in a fixed environment where a true freedom of association doesn't really exist. So mine has always been treat them the best you can the first time you meet them. After that, treat them as they treat you. Now, for me, if I do a business deal, right? So like I didn't get paid for a rather dangerous and expensive trip out to Australia when I went on a speaking tour with Ms. L. Southern in the Southern Hemisphere, I might add. It was a complete shite show. And I'm fairly sure I know what happened to the money, but we didn't get paid. In fact, I ended up having to pay the security team because they did a great job. And boy, were they needed in that violent leftist hellscape of a speaking tour. And so if those guys who we had a contract, they never paid. Now, if those guys reached out and said, hey, Steph, love to sponsor, we'd love to pay you for another speaking tour. Would I do it again? Well, of course not. I mean, I might do another speaking tour, but I wouldn't do it with them because, you know, once bitten, twice shy, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. So I don't believe in the forgiveness part, as you know, without the apology, the restitution, the assurances by which it's not going to happen again, and so on, right? I mean, if the guys in Australia called me up and said, we found Jesus, we're really sorry, we're going to pay you for the tour that we contracted to pay you for, and, you know, we found Jesus, and, you know, for all of your trouble, we're going to double the pay, and, you know, we'd love to do it again. Okay, well, that's a business discussion to be had. I would be open to that in terms of, like, just feeling it out, so to speak, right? But if somebody's cheated you or hasn't paid you, and it was not a small amount of money, but if someone's cheated you, why would you do business with them again? So this, forgive them if they stop cheating you, requires that you're putting yourself in a situation to be cheated again. And why would you do that? Why would you bother? Why would you bother doing that? So, treat people the best you can the first time you meet them. After that, treat them as they treat you. And you have no obligation to continue in relationships where it's costing you. You have no obligation to continue in relationships that are costing you. Of course not. I mean, why would you? So in these kinds of situations where it's kind of fixed and you kind of got to deal with the same people over and over again, this is what it says. The players might meet again. No! No! No, no, no. All right. So, there's good science behind what it is that I'm saying, but this tit for tat is a situation that works when you cannot escape relationships or choose not to escape relationships, but it doesn't when you generally have voluntary relationships, then you don't need to do tit for tat. All right. Let's get to your questions. Let us get to your questions. So, Sarah Stock. So, Milo Yiannopoulos. He's an interesting fellow. He's an interesting fellow. I've had my roller coasters to some degree with Milo. I think he's generally a force for good. And I very rarely regret having posted something. every now and then I'd be like, oh, that was not quite well worded, or that could be misinterpreted, or something like that. So there's this woman, Sarah Stark, sort of a trad con influencer. Pretty girls with mics, what can you say, right? And she was making a guy wait for marriage, and at the same time, apparently she was raw dogging it with her boss. And anyway, I'll sort of get into all of this. So Milo has had a Spyro-Gyra amount of redemption arcs, in my view. And I think he settled as a none-shall-pass gatekeeper. In other words, I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he does it. It's really quite a Christian Christmas miracle. But the man knows where the bodies are buried. Man, if you've done something wrong, Milo has his expert bloodhounds, and maybe people just bring it to him. Maybe he's the, you know, Sparkle Princess center of alt-right gossip. I don't know. But if you've done something wrong, Milo is like, he's like a sonar bat with highlights. I mean, he just beep beep. He just, you know, like in space games, lock on. He locks on. And somebody says, I fear Milo like I fear God. And that's not a bad way of doing it, because I think he's an ex-gay at the moment. But in my experience, a gay man can be a tiny, tiny bit bitter and vengeful. And Milo, extraordinarily wronged. An extraordinarily wronged man. Has he sinned? Yes, we've all sinned, blah, blah, blah. But as the old saying goes from King Lear, he is a man far more sinned against than sinning, and he lost millions of dollars, perhaps tens of millions of dollars from deplatforming. and he has bounced back, and he obviously on Tucker Carlson and so on. So good for him. I suppose you could say he's managed his career better than I have. But then I think that there are serial killers who've managed their careers better than I have. So, you know, good for him. That's the taller than Mickey Rooney contest. So Gandalf is my image of Milo. So there are these fake conservative Christian influencers who want to cross over to the bridge, and Gandalf is there like, none shall pass. You shall not pass. Right? And anyway, so I wrote that Gandalf, that Milo was like Gandalf on the bridge. And again, I hate going back and I didn't edit it, but what I should have said is Milo was like a spandex Gandalf on the bridge. None shall pass. Spandex Gandalf, great name for a band, but also it's just got a very rippy trippy kind of cadence to it. Spandex Gandalf. And of course, I know he's not wearing spandex, except in my dreams. But he has all the dirt. He has all the tea in China. So let's see. Sarah Stark, a conservative influencer and self-described Christian nationalist who worked as a contributor for the right-wing media outlet Rift TV, gained attention for promoting traditional Catholic trad-cath values like chastity, marriage, and family. She positioned herself, this is from Grok, as a trad woman, short for traditional, emphasizing submissiveness, homemaking, and rejecting modern feminist ideals or casual sex. Now, this in the art world, this would be called a setup. You know, a woman who, methinks the lady doth protest too much. Well, modern feminist girl power stuff is terrible. Casual sex is terrible. Blah, 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 blah. Right? I mean, this is like the televangelists in the 80s and 90s who railed against infidelity and homosexuality and were often caught with young men in compromising positions. It's almost like a setup, right? So in early 2026, Sarah Stark became embroiled in a public scandal when allegations surfaced of her having an affair with her married boss, Elijah Schaefer, another prominent right-wing figure known for preaching traditional family values. according to leaked audio and messages shared by commentator, bam, 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 he's going to have this. Actually, maybe it's not. Bam, bam, bam. Maybe Milo should have the, oh, like the stuff that in the TV show Fallout, whenever the ragged jacket ghoul comes out and all the women go, smash, hear me out. Oh, so maybe that's what Milo, I don't know, what should Milo's entrance music be? But something. So, according to leaked audio messages shared by commentator Milo, now, I don't know about sharing people's private phone calls and stuff like that. I haven't listened to any of it. But anyway, nonetheless, it's out. The affair began after a conference in February 2025 involving alcohol and possibly Benadryl, leading to a blackout, and continued for months until her engagement in August 2025. So, yeah. You'd be absolutely amazed. You'd be absolutely amazed how many women sleep with a guy and then claim they just can't remember it. And they must have been drugged or dosed. Like, you know, there's this paranoia. You see these women putting these covers on their drinks, right? There's this paranoia that you're getting roofied. My friends of Sadiq Khan. But you're getting roofied. And it turns out that a whole bunch of women were tested who thought they'd been roofied. They weren't roofied at all. I suppose it's just handfuls of tequila and SSRIs. It's not a great combo. Not a great combo. But yeah, a lot of times women, especially if they've been drinking or whatever, oh, I mixed this and this and I blackout and so on. And it's tough, right? So the affair began and continued for months until her engagement in August 2025. Now, she was making her fiancé wait for marriage to have sex while having sex, apparently, with her boss. So Stock later apologized for mistakes while denying some claims, but the incident highlighted apparent hypocrisy as she publicly criticized others for non-traditional behaviors like premarital sex. I don't think she's even a natural blonde. More likes on the live. Yeah, that would be nice. And I see your question. I will get to that question about immigration. So we're really not designed to live without sex. We're really not. I mean, trust me, it's tougher even for me to do a long live stream. We're not really designed to live without sex. And this idea that you can reach sexual maturity in your teens and then, you know, you get married at 25 or 30, you know, the reason that sex before marriage was frowned upon was because you had about 8 minutes between like sexual maturity and getting married. So if you can't hold off for 8 minutes, then I guess you're not tantric sting, right? So when people get into their 20s and are claiming to be virgins or are, you know, saying the man has to wait and I'm so traditional, it's like, well, what's happened to your sex drive? What's happened to your sexual requirements? What's happened to your sexual persona, so to speak, right? So I did see, I guess it's fair to say, Elijah Schaefer. That was his name, right? You know, I guess he had some charisma. He's got a fairly nice physique. He's tall, whatever it is, right? Not my particular taste for looks, but, you know, that's obviously a kind of subjective thing. And so, you know, this sort of alpha thing, right? I did a show about this today. So that will, I mean, come out shortly. But when women are around powerful men, the alphas, their sex drive intensifies, right? I mean, when I'm shaving in the morning, let me tell you. But so, and this is because women would be around alpha men only if they were single, right? So what happened in the past, a woman at, you know, 16, 17, 18, whatever, like evolutionarily speaking, she'd get married, she'd be pair bonded, and then she wouldn't really be around alpha males at all, because she'd be raising kids and doing the hunter-gathering stuff and, you know, cross-pollinating cultural norms with other women. So she wouldn't be out there alone with sexually available alpha males. It just wasn't the environment, right? So a lot of modern female dysfunction is just fish out of water stuff. Women did not evolve to have coercive power, right? I mean, this is the force doctrine, right? That women can't escape the patriarchy because women cannot enforce their own rights. They always have to appeal to men to enforce their own rights. So the only way that they can fight the patriarchy is to appeal men to have them fight the patriarchy, right? So in the 60s, when women said, hey, man, we are underpaid. We are underpaid. Unfair. Right? Creaky doors, right? Like the knees of an old maid. So when in the 60s, women felt underpaid, or they were basically informed by the destabilizing communists that they were underpaid, unfair. What did they do? Did they say, we're going to create our own parallel agorist economy. We're going to start our own companies. We're going to hire other women. We're going to... No. What do? They go whine to the government, go complain to the government. And then the government passes laws saying equal pay for work of equal value, as if that can be determined by anything other than the free market. So they run to the government, and then the government threatens companies with lawsuits, prosecutions, charges, whatever, which are all enforced by men, or at least certainly were in the 60s. And then because women complain about the patriarchy, they have to run to the patriarchy to enforce the remedies for their complaints about the patriarchy, so they cannot escape the patriarchy. And the typical example is, you can't think of a time in history when women overthrew their male oppressors, but you can think of a lot of times in history when men overthrew their male oppressors. Women just have to take it. They have to take, and one of the reasons this is put forward is to remind women that we're really nice. Men are really nice. That the rights that women enjoy are provided and protected by men, and men, particularly in the West, are really nice. Because we don't want to take away women's rights. Other places in the world, they just wake up, you know, scratch themselves and say, well, that's it for women's rights. And, you know, go look at pictures of women in Iran before the revolution, before the takeover by Khomeini, right? Short skirts, going to school and so on. And then, boom, right? You're in your beekeeper's outfit. And that's where you stay. Until men find some way to change that, if they do. So the sort of forced doctrine is a way to remind women, because women have been kind of psyoped into, you know, hating men and viewing us as oppressors and so on. And it's like, boy, you want to see some oppression? See what happens when men get tired of women screaming at them that they're oppressors and just take away their rights. It happens. It's happened continually throughout history. It would be nice to escape this cycle, but as long as we have government, that's not going to happen, right? Because government is organized patriarchy that responds to the least proud. Like I was reading about, I think it's at Stanford, like 40% of the students are disabled, whereas in equivalent community universities or higher education, like community college and so on, it's like 1% to 2%. So why is it that students are going to university and saying, I'm disabled, at weights, you know, 10 to 40 times other places? Well, because if you say you're disabled, you get private rooms, you get you hand in your assignments later, you get longer to take your exams, you get excused from various things. If you say, I have social anxiety, then you don't have to participate in class discussions. If you have agoraphobia, they'll give you a bigger room. I don't know, whatever, right? So you just get all these benefits. But what that means is that anybody with any sense of pride is not going to do that. They're not going to say, "Oh yeah, I'm disabled." Yeah, they're not going to lie, because so the people who are the most false and amoral and predatory will get all of the free stuff, and everybody who's honest, anyway, you still got to get all that. So for a woman, if you're around your boss, they say there's this work husband thing. Oh, he's my work husband, my work boss or whatever, right? And this drives a lot of men kind of crazy, that if the boss says to his underling, even the male boss says to his female underling, "I need you to work all weekend," she's like, "Okay," right? But if her husband says, "Hey, can you make me a sandwich?" She's like, "Hey, man, I'm a girl boss. I'm not your slave," right? And that completely Fs up the dynamics in the marriage. Completely and totally Fs up the dynamics in the marriage. Because when a man, a husband, sees his wife nodding and smiling and obeying a powerful man and not willing to do things for him, the entire sexual dynamic of the relationship is just toast. That's why there's so many dead marriages out there. So I don't know much about this Elijah Schaefer, other than his last name is the same last name as the guy, Paul Schaefer from the old night show. Anyway, David Letterman show. So if you are a woman, and you're sort of in your sexual prime, and you're around a good-looking, well-built, powerful, wealthy alpha male, you're going to drift. This is sort of famous scene in Dumb and Dumber where Harold and Lloyd, is it something like that? They're hiking along, and then this bus stops, and there's these girls who come out in bikinis, all very pretty, and they're saying, "We just need someone to apply a tanning oil with a Hawaiian bikini girls," or something like that. And so, of course, it's a joke that they don't recognize what's being offered to them, right? But of course, if they took that and they were rubbing oil on these bikini girls, they're going to start having feelings for them. I mean, by feelings, I mean hormones. And their ball sacks are going to get heavier than wrecking balls on Jupiter. They're going to be in a state of constant subterranean arousal with all of these bikini girls and rubbing oil and stuff like that, right? So this is what it's like for women to be around sort of powerful, charismatic, authoritative men with resources, right? So, and the other thing too, of course, is that we as men do not understand the absolute rank levels of delusion that women have these days because of the endless insta-contact simping that happens on the account of any reasonably attractive woman on social media. And there was a pretty funny skit I saw. It was a comedy skit where a woman was dating a guy and she's like, "He's really nice, but he's not on the internet. He's got no social media. He doesn't do anything on his phone. He's just not online." And the other women are like, "But how does he send you dick pics?" And she's like, "That's the thing. I've only ever seen his dick, like, in the flesh." It's funny, right? It's funny. So I can't imagine what it would be like. I mean, it's an older guy, right? But I also can't imagine what it would be like as a woman to just get this endless inflow of, "You're beautiful and you're perfect and let's go on a date and here's a ticket to Tahiti and let's meet up and blah, 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 blah." It's madness. I mean, it's sort of like Bill Gates, when he worked for Microsoft, he originally had just a parking spot. Do you know, actually, it's interesting. In Japan, the parking spots closest to the main building are the ones taken up last because everyone's leaving them for the people who are really late to get in sooner. It's very nice. I don't know how that went from torturing Australians, that culture, from torturing Australians to all of this low-T K-pop boy band stuff. It's one of the wildest descents or horizontal slides in human history. Um, But Bill Gates used to have an outdoor parking spot, but he couldn't take it anymore because when he'd get out of his car and go to the Microsoft building, because he was wealthy and a sort of celebrity back then, people would just be swarming him all over, everywhere, just swarming him. Oh, I need help, or my sister's ill, and I have this great business idea. So he ended up having to just get a parking spot inside so that he was not constantly swarmed by people. Now, I mean, the level of fame that I achieved was obviously nothing like that, but I had a little inkling of what it's sort of like in that I would get recognized in public and people would chat with me and want to take selfies and, you know, just a little bit. I'm just like, what is it, Cernovich? I'm jazz famous, like to certain people. And this is sort of the height of my fame, and I was doing quite a bit of online work and so on. But to be a reasonably attractive woman in the internet age is to have the kind of clout that normally only high aristocracy, royalty, and multi-decker millionaires would get. It's wild. The absolute flow of gassing people up, of gaslighting women, of you're perfect, you're wonderful, you're beautiful, you're blah, 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 blah. I would say, I mean, I think if most men were to open up an attractive woman's phone on the internet and scroll through the DMs, it would just be absolutely shocking. I genuinely think I'm not kidding about this, in about 1 minute, these females receive more compliments than most men get in their entire lifetime. I'm not kidding about that. I'm not kidding about, like, 1 minute, right? If they're live streaming, 1 minute, they're getting 10 compliments, right? If they're live streaming and they're attractive, maybe 1 minute, maybe 5 minutes. But in 1 or 5 or at most 10 minutes, women get more compliments online than men get their entire lives. I mean, outside of mom saying, you're nice looking, or your wife, you know, my wife thinks I'm very attractive and so on, which makes her obviously objective and purely phenotypically scientific. But men are completely starved for compliments. And of course, as the dray workhorses of the modern world, men aren't going to get, you don't compliment your slave because then he gets uppity, right? And so the difference between what men experience in the world and what women experience in the world has never been wider at all. Has never been wider at all. So there is a market. And when men see attractive women saying stuff, they listen. I mean, one of the things that made me a better philosopher is not being a hot young female, because I actually have to, you know, come up with good, compelling arguments and hopefully entertaining ways of talking about philosophy, but I don't have cleavage and blush-heavy cheekbones to do all of that. So, all right. So can't stop themselves from engaging in hookups. The other thing, too, of course, is that if you are in a religious tradition where you can do wrong and be forgiven, it makes it more likely that you will do wrong. And in general, loose women used to come to a bad end. And so you could make the case to loose women. Thoughts. You could make the case to loose women, that if you engage in promiscuous or destructive behavior, it's going to go badly for you, right? You're going to not get married. You're going to end up being a hunched over typist spinster, and you're going to end up in someone's attic, if you're lucky, at the end of your life and all of that. So it's bad. Don't do it, right? But now you see all of these OnlyFans models, they're going from landing on their feet to landing on their backs to some guy falling to their knees in front of them, and all of these women with these most horrendous pasts known to man, God, or devil, they all, you know, they can settle down. I mean, they can marry, they can, right? So that's changed all of that, right? All right. Somebody says, in places like Poland and Hungary, the state has not used third world immigration as a tool for accumulating power. In the West, they seem to have done so. Why is there this contrast? Poland and Hungary are ex-communist countries, so they are very skeptical towards anything said by communists and leftists and so on. And so the sort of mass immigration stuff is a destabilizing thing often by the communists. So they don't have any credibility there. So my question also applies to East Asian countries like Japan, South Korea, and China. Well, again, they have fewer communists in power there. All right. How, Jorge? Nice to meet you, Jorge. Oh, nice to see you again. How would you recommend handling people in your life who constantly avoid reading your articles or books but insist on getting answers to related questions? Now, do you mean my or your? Or your. He says, situation, wife storms out after taking offense to being reminded to wash her hands with soap after using the toilet. My Asian wife screams at me if I remind her to wash her hands with soap. My wife insists that water is sufficient because it's our toilet. What? Let me just see if I understand that. So she goes to the toilet, and she says, just rinsing my hands is fine. Well, oh gosh, I remember in one of my first programming job having this debate once, where the debate was, well, soap, this is sort of before antibacterial soap, like soap is not inherently antibacterial, so why does washing your soap get rid of germs? And it's because the germs are on the oils that are on your hands, and soap removes the oils and therefore removes the germs that are stuck in the oil, right? It'd be like if you had spider eggs in the wallpaper, you take off the wallpaper, you take off the spider eggs. So my Asian wife screams at me if I remind her to wash her hands with soap. She says, water is sufficient because it's our toilet. It's our toilet. Well, I mean, you know, even if you flush a toilet, sorry to be gross, but if you flush a toilet, close the lid, right? You flush the toilet, puts all of this stuff, aerosols into the air. It's kind of gross, right? So, wash your hands with soap. I had a girlfriend who yelled at me, and I just waited till we were in public and yelled at her. She was appalled, right? How dare you humiliate me in front of blah, 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 right? And I said, well, but yelling is fine, isn't it? I mean, you yell at me, so yelling is fine. Well, not in public. It's like, well, why, if it's good behavior, why would we hide it? Well, we don't have sex in public. It's like, yeah, no, I get that. But yelling is not sex, right? So why would you want to hide? Why would you want to hide bad behavior, honey? I mean, if yelling at me is fine, then me yelling at you is fine too. So, I mean, you're married, so it's a different situation, but don't ever, ever, ever put up with being disrespected. I mean, obviously, unless you've done something inherently disrespectful, right? But do not put up with it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Somebody yells at you, yell at them back. Tit for tat. You can also sit down with her and have a calm discussion and say, okay, you have a perspective that washing hands with soap is not necessary. I have a perspective that washing hands with soap is necessary and basic fucking civility. What are we going to do? Well, we have to have an impartial third party that we can go to get an answer. All right, let us, AI, right? Let us go there. Why wash hands? This is going to make me look like the filthiest person on earth. It's just for a show. Why wash hands with soap? I assume, again, the oils that have all of the bacteria, all right? Washing your hands with soap and water is one of the most effective ways to remove germs, dirt, oils, and harmful substances from your skins, like communism. Far better than using water alone. Here's the science behind why it works so well. Soap molecules are like tiny pins on lollipops with two distinct ends. Hydrophilic head. Is that a blowjob in a swimming pool? Hydrophilic head. Water-loving. Bonds easily with water. Hydrophobic tail. Water-fearing or oil-loving. Repels water but attracts oils, fats, and greases. When you lather soap with water, these molecules form structures called micelles. Little bubbles where the hydrophobic tails cluster inward, away from water, and the hydrophilic heads face outward towards water. This creates a mechanism that traps and removes contaminants. How soap removes germs and dirt. Boy, you didn't know you were getting this today, did you? One, breaks the bond, James Bond, with skin. Many germs, bacteria, viruses, fungi, stick to your hands via natural skin oils, grease from food, touching things, or other lipids. Water alone can't mix with or remove these oils effectively. Oil and water don't mix, so germs can stay put. Disrupts and lifts contaminants. The hydrophobic tails of soap molecules wedge into oils, fats, and the lipid fatty envelopes of many viruses, like coronaviruses and some bacteria. This pries apart or disrupts those structures, literally breaking them down or loosening their grip on your skin. Traps and suspends. The tails grab the oils, germs, dirt, while the heads connect to water, forming micelles or micelles that encapsulate the mess. That means wrap around. The friction from scrubbing, rubbing your hands together, helps dislodge everything further. Rinses away. When you rinse with running water, the micelles, now carrying the trapped germs, dirt, and broken virus particles, flow down the drain. Soap doesn't usually kill most germs outright, although it can destroy envelope viruses by dismantling the outer layer. It mechanically removes them so they can't infect you or spread to others. Plain water removes some loose dirt and germs through mechanical action, but it struggles with oily, greasy residue where pathogens hide. Anyway, so she is, she's wrong. She's wrong. Here's a simple life hack for having a good, happy, quality life, my friends. Simple life hack for having a good, quality life. If someone cannot admit that she is wrong, do not have this person in your life. Now, I know you're married and all of that. I get all of that, right? Should have done it beforehand, but, you know, we've all made mistakes. But you cannot have a good relationship with anyone who can't admit when he or she is wrong. And it's not too hard to begin dislodging this narcissism, right? So I had employees who couldn't admit fault. I mean, I've interviewed 1,000 people. I've hired like 100 people over the course of my career, pretty successfully. I think I had to fire maybe 5 people. So I had a 95% success rate with hiring people. So that's pretty good. And if somebody wouldn't admit fault, I say, well, okay. Do human beings make mistakes? Yes. Are you a human being? Yes. Therefore, you make mistakes. I'm not punitive, but we need to be able to admit mistakes in order to get better. And I would say, like, have you ever taken coaching in sports, or have you ever taken coaching in writing or anything, right? Do you have a teacher or a professor explain how things work, right? So you need to be able to take coaching. It's not punitive, right? Maybe you had people in your past who, if you made a mistake, just you go all kinds of Hannibal Lecter on your nads, but that's not me, right? Don't make me pay for other people's meanness towards you, right? So you can say to your wife, wait, when was the last time that you were wrong? Just out of curiosity. And don't let her wriggle out of the conversation, right? Just, when was the last time you were wrong? If you can't remember a time when you were wrong, then I would say, if you can't be wrong, if it's incapable, if you cannot be wrong, I want you to take $10,000 out of her savings or take out a $10,000 loan on her house and go and invest in the market. Go and invest in the market, because you can't be wrong. You are perfect. And if you can't be wrong, let's go be zillionaires, because you're never going to make a bad investment decision, because you're never wrong. Let's go to Vegas. You'll always know
when to hold 'em, when to fold 'em. Know when to walk away, know when to run.
All right. What is your favorite book, movie, car, song, place to visit? Favorite book, probably Crime and Punishment. I'm reading The Fountainhead again for the third or fourth time. Movie, I don't really rewatch old movies. A favorite car, I think the Cybertruck is cool, but a favorite song, I'm listening to The March of the Black Queen. I was just doing that for working out beforehand. A place to visit? I mean, I hate to say it anyway, my wife and child are. All right. Women are high on digital attention. They don't even want real men in the flesh anymore. Again, some. Right, some. Do you mean it? Do you mean it? My sister is average looking and 24 years old, says someone, yet she gets about over 40 men trying to talk to her per week on social media. Yeah. Somebody says, Sarah Gonzales, Speedy Gonzales. Sarah Gonzales called out Elijah Schaefer 3 years ago. People called her a liar. Guess she's validated, huh? Mmm. Ooh. 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 Is it rant time? Is it rant time? It's been a while, but I have one. Oh, you just reminded me. You tell me, 1 to 10. Where should I go? Where should I go? In terms of the rant. 10. Sode, don't tempt me. Do it. Do it. I think we may have a rant coming. This is not the time to fall asleep to free domain. 11. I could reach to an 11. All right. Right. What mechanism should be in place on social media in the public square for people whose careers get fucked? Because they're called crazy conspiracy theorists, tinfoil hat wearing mad cappers, fidget spinning Alex Jones rectum wannabes, because they're just nuts. Pedo networks in high places. That's insane. So what should happen in society? What should happen in society when people who've been punished for years and years and years for making rational arguments with evidence, you're crazy, you're a conspiracy theorist, replacement ain't real, blah, 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 you're just castigated, attacked, deplatformed, harmed, lied about, slandered, economically wrecked. What should happen if it turns out? Yeah, sorry, man, you were right. You know, one of the reasons I got deplatformed, oh, pick one, but this was pretty proximate, was talking about Jeffrey Epstein and blackmail and pedo rings and foreign policy, you know, all the stuff, all the things. And it was like, oh, no, you're wrong. You're bad. You're prejudiced. You're bigoted. You're anti this. You're whatever, right? Psh, despawned. Gone. I'm sent to the back rooms. Ooh. Now, in case you have not spent a lot of time on X or other social media, but particularly X, which is still a relative bastion of free speech, you may have noticed, it turns out I was completely fucking right. You know, talking with Cernovich 7 years ago about Epstein, we went into great detail on Epstein. I talked about it quite a lot on X 7 years ago, 6 years ago. Had an entire doctor on saying, the hyoid, you know, the suicide, right? The whole thing, right? I mean, not to mention, you know, a couple other things. Global warming is bullshit. Bitcoin has value. Crazy, man, crazy. Or IQ matters. immigration will not be economically positive. You can't have open borders and a welfare state. Oh, the voluntary family. Back in 19 years ago, 18 years ago, my God, this scandal can now be drafted. So to 2008, I was written about as a evil cult leader for saying you didn't have to be in abusive relationships with relentlessly toxic family members. Evil, unconscionable, home wrecker, destroyer of families for fun and profit. Cult leader. Now it's everywhere. Now it's all over the place. Now there's mainstream articles. Oh, I separated from my toxic family. I couldn't feel better for it. Boom! Oh, how about lockdowns will do far more harm than good? I mean, I won't go into it all. But the number of things that I've been right about that I was attacked, castigated, lied about, maligned, slandered, and defamed, and deplatformed. What should happen? What should the mechanism be if it turns out you were right? You were attacked, lied about, stripped of access, income, and reputation. Oh, and you were right. Well, I try not to be bitter, because I have a pretty good life. I try not to be bitter. And I, you know, when I see people whining about blah, 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 I get it. And I get that too. I try not to be bitter. But I got to tell you, if there's no cost to deplatforming people who turn out to be right, it's just going to keep on happening. And human progress is going to fucking slow to nothing and then recede. Because people look at people like me and say, well, fuck me, there's no point being early. What's the value in being early? What's the good in being early? How the hell does it help me to be early? But people have to be early, otherwise the conversation doesn't progress. All the stuff that I was talking about 20 years ago is common knowledge now. And I wrestle daily, I'm telling you, my friends, I wrestle. Because there's a bunch of shit I'm early on now. Nope. No, cost benefit. What's the point? What do you get? Flamethrowers, horse hooves to the face, lies, slander, deplatforming, attempted economic ruin. For what? Where's the payoff? Oh, don't worry, don't worry. But you'll be recognized in the future as pioneers. Fuck the future. Something's got to pay off in the here and now. Oh, no, but don't you have the emotional satisfaction of just being so right? It's like, I know that I'm right. I don't need time to catch up with me. Ooh, and who's circling back and saying, I mean, occasionally I'll see it, but who circles back and say, damn, that guy had it going on. He knew shit. He knew stuff. And where's the reward? I mean, if it was a free society, it would run something like this. So if a social media company deplatformed someone, well, in a free society, you'd have free speech. But let's just say a social media company deplatformed someone for something that later turned out to be true, they would owe that guy $10 million. Because deplatforming without cost is an excessive hammer. When you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. I got a bunch of stuff floating around in my head that I'm early on now. Fuck it. No. Because there's no mechanism for recompense. There's no mechanism for correction. I'm early now. I'm going to get shafted again. Oh, but it helps advance the progress, the conversation. No. No, I'm not a martyr that way. I'm not a Kantian. I'm not a... At all costs, speak the truth. I've said that repeatedly. The truth is not a sword to be drawn at all costs. Now, maybe if there was a circle back and, wow, gosh, and, you know, let's get you back on, and you were prescient, and you were ahead of your time, and blah, blah, blah. And, but no, it's nothing. People just act as if these ideas just appeared out of nowhere, came in through the ether. No. The road to the future was built by paving over my balls. I'm going down like the stuttering guy in A Fish Called Wanda. Oh, no, he's driving. Sorry. Kevin Klein character, whatever his name was. I mean, how, you know, help me see. If I can't see, help me see. Where was the... Where's the benefit? I said to people 20 years ago, school, like university is becoming increasingly a negative sum game. Inbox full of enraged parents. You telling my son he doesn't need any higher education. You're going to ruin his life. And now everyone has got useless, shitty degrees that don't gain them anything in the workplace and graduated with $50,000 to $100,000 in student debt. Any of those parents writing me back and saying, ooh, sorry, man, you were right. You were right. He's a conspiracy theorist because he said that the COVID virus was almost certainly man-made. Did a whole presentation, the case against China. No, crazy conspiracy theorist. It's nuts. Of course it jumped from pangolins and fucking dragons and unicorns and elf mosquitoes. Kind of important, because if COVID-19 was lab-made to infect humans, lockdowns did less than nothing. The whole point of lockdowns is slow the spread so it doesn't further adapt to infect humans. But if it's already engineered to infect humans, lockdown does nothing. So they couldn't let that thesis stand that I put forward with a lot of expertise. What's the benefit? Hey, listen, I get it. If you invest early and blah, 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 fantastic. Then you know, he's a crazy investor, but, you know, they don't slander you and, you know, you make money on the investments and all that. But for all of the cloud of stuff I've got orbiting, I've got all of these ideas that are orbiting me like the rings of Saturn. And I could be 10 to 20 years early too. I might not live to, I guess, in 20 years, I'll be 79. I will make it. But do I want to do this again? Do I want to be right again? 10 to 20 years early? In fact, I was right about the family stuff long before I became a public figure. I do food like almost 30 years ago. What's the benefit? Society should circle back and try to heal the wounds of those it brutalized who turned out to be right. You know, I've told this story before, hand washing, right? So the guy in the 19th century who first thought, hey, before we go elbow deep in somebody's bowels and intestines, maybe we should wash our hands first. And he was like, that's insane. You're mad. Stripped of his license, thrown into an insane asylum, beaten to death by an orderly. And it's like, no, 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 but it's okay because 100 years later, he's recognized as a great guy who literally saved tens of millions of lives by getting the people to wash their fucking hands before operating. But he still got beaten to death in an insane asylum. Where's the benefit for being right? Material. Satisfaction? I can't get no. It's an old joke, so just a by the by. It's an old joke I remember from when I was a kid. The Italian entry to the Eurovision Song Contest, I Can't Get No Contraception, has been withdrawn after the Pope advised them to pull it out at the last minute. That's a fine multi-layered joke. What is the point? What is the best? Yeah, my pattern recognition skills, it's just philosophy and basics and premises and principles. But honestly, fuck the planet as far as that goes. I mean, hey, I'm happy to talk to you guys. Wonderful. I'm happy to talk to you guys. But I was right about all the Epstein stuff. I was right about all of the, you know, when people would argue with me since about the age of 15, right? It's a, you know, it's a good old time, 45 years ago. 45 years ago, people would say, but without the government, how are we going to get any national defense? Meanwhile, governments are letting people pour across the border and attacking anyone who tries to protect their borders. So you get the exact opposite of national defense when you have a government. Is anybody ever circling back and saying, hey, man, I've kind of seen how things have played out and you were right and I'm sorry. Nope. Everyone's just like, ka-dunk, ka-dunk. Hey, did you feel that? Or did we drive over something? Fuck it. Keep driving. You'll be fine. Ah, we didn't hit anyone. Crazy. And there's no payoff. And of course, society to progress needs to honor people who were shockingly right early. Galileo half tortured to death. Well, but 400 years later, he gets an apology, so that's okay. Still got tortured while old. Or early scientists burnt at the stake, tortured, mutilated. Now, I mean, now it's just deplatforming and stuff, but society needs its early warning radar. It needs people up in the crow's nest, you know, like the top of the mast. Society needs people scanning the horizon. Society needs people to be early and right, and it just fucks them continually. Hold you down, say uncle, twist your fucking arm out of its arm socket. Hit you with wet fish around the nads till you smell like Bonnie Blue. That's what they do. The people who are desperately needed to help navigate society to a better place are repeatedly fucked over by society, and then there's never a reckoning. There's never a circle back. There's never a benefit. There's never a recovery. Maybe it's long after you're dead, but who cares? Not I. So, you know, like somebody was asking me the other day, well, what are your thoughts about all the people who won't be able to make a living because AI is coming? It's like, I don't care. I don't care. The beautiful thing, and I mean this genuinely, I genuinely mean this, the beautiful thing about having a society that fucks you over and never circles back to apologize or make any kind of restitution is absolute liberation from care and responsibility. Do you know, like I'm serious about this, do you know the giant burden that I've been carrying my whole life because of my potential, my communication skills, my reasoning skills, my debate skills, my prediction skills, my philosophical skills, right? I am awesomely rare, and the first person who's always been skeptical about my abilities is me. every time I do something new that I can do well, I'm like, no way, no way. I remember the first time that I was in business, I was sent out to deal with some technical issues with a client. And I was out there with the two senior salespeople, and there was just, we walked into this big giant meeting, and they were really mad, and they were going to sue, and they were this, because they'd been overpromised in on the sales side. And I just stood up and I listened and I negotiated and back and forth, calmed them down, avoided a giant lawsuit. The client was happy. We fixed everything. And I was just like, I didn't know I could do that. Cool. I didn't know I could negotiate like that. And I start doing call-in shows, and I'm like, I just want to talk about philosophy and UPB and abstractions and virtues. And people are just like, family, family, history, trauma. And I'm able to bring philosophical principles to bear on their issues. Like, wow, I didn't know I could do that. Somebody hits me with a dream. I'm like, boom, boom, boom. It's about this. Oh, I didn't know I could do that. I'm incredibly skeptical about my own abilities, but I'm an empiricist. And if I can do it, I can do it. Extemporaneous speaking for, what are we going, an hour here? It's not the easiest thing in the world, but I can do it. I appreciate your questions. Your participation makes this a whole lot saner. Believe it or not, this is the sane version. So I've always felt this like, oh my God, why me? Why me? Why me? It's crushing, like carry the ring to Mordor. It's like my responsibility. I got to do it. Nobody else is pushing objective secular ethics and stateless society and the voluntary family and skepticism against government science, quote science, and reasoning from first principles. Is like, God, can somebody else do it? I don't want to be a pirate. Can somebody else do it, please? God above, don't make me. Don't give me all these abilities and this responsibility, and oh my God, it doesn't end. Ah. Can I just be less good at things? Please, I'm saying this. Please, God, let me be less good at things, and then I can walk away. And I can walk away. Don't make me the best surgeon in the world. I got to save all these people. I can't sleep. I can't rest. Weight, burden. Every morning it's like, come on, man. Can't I just be good at baseball or something fun? Just give me a rock and roll singing voice and I'll go do Bad Moon Rising. Come on, man. Don't put this inverted pyramid of moral responsibility on my giant noggin. I don't wanna. Come on, somebody else. Somebody else, somebody else. But no. But no. So this, you know, this responsibility, which is not always fun. I mean, it's not. There's some great things about it. Don't get me wrong. But feeling like a commodity that has to be used up as a solve to the world's wounds and to try to wrestle it, to point it in a better direction. Not a lot of fun. It has great elements to it. I'm not a martyr. I'm not like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. But it's a lot of responsibility. And if other people were defining and pushing secular ethics, you know, at least Darwin, who was not a big public speaker, at least Darwin had his Darwin's bulldog, the guy who went out and just ferociously tore into anyone and debated everyone and pushed it. I got nothing. I don't know any libertarians who are pushing. I mean, some are talking about peaceful parenting. But, I mean, as far as UPB goes, it's up to me to push it forward, to answer questions. The value of philosophy at a personal level, which is really where values have to be enacted, that's me. I don't know that many people come out of Aristotle with a clear plan about their life. But, you know, when I have call-in shows and so on. So, long story short, it's you know, as I've sort of become more and more aware of my own abilities, and of course, if I were a religious man, I would say I'm humbled by the gifts that God has given me. I'm an instrument in his hands, and it certainly feels that way. I feel like I'm a fucking meat hand puppet of eternal philosophy that just jams itself up my rectum and makes me say stuff to advance the cause, no matter how painful and proctology-like it might feel. Oh, I felt that. But yeah, I I feel like an animated meat puppet on the cosmic ghostly puppet fingers of philosophy that just tell me what to say and do. It's like Socrates with his daemon, right? His conscience, right? Like these sentences just assemble themselves in my mind, and I'm not like doing it. It's I don't have thoughts. Thoughts use me to get out. And people ought to say this, like the song. I didn't write the song. The song just appeared. The song wrote me. The song came through me, that kind of stuff. And it's like that. So there's a lot of responsibility. You know, the guy who saved 100 million lives by, or 10 million lives or whatever, by telling doctors to wash their hands, probably 100 million at this point. I mean, if he knew that he was going to end up beaten to death in an insane asylum, would he have done it? I mean, look at... Fuck. I mean, Sigmund Freud. That coke-pushing, child-denying asshole. What did Sigmund Freud find when he was trying to treat people who had hysteria, right? Women who, their eyes worked, but they couldn't see. Their pupils dilated, but they said they couldn't see. They couldn't feel their arms, even though their arms had circulation and so on, and showed physiological signs of being touched. They couldn't see. They couldn't feel things. They couldn't feel anything in their lower limbs. They couldn't walk, even though their legs worked. Like, they had hysteria, right? Well, what did he do? We started asking them questions. And he found out. What did he find out in Vienna among the intellectual elites? Ooh, that's interesting. There's a lot of child rape among the powerful. It's like 150 years ago, right? There's a lot of child rape among the powerful. And he started to talk about this. And then he got the Joe Rogan call. Oh, I don't think so, buddy. You got 6 kids. You like having a medical license? You like having an income, do you? Shut up about that, if you don't mind. And he did. He said, kind of wrong about that. I thought that the children were being raped by their parents, uncles, aunts, sometimes. I thought that the children were being raped. Turns out it was just a fantasy. They just wanted it. They dreamed about it. You got the Oedipus complex, the Electra complex, right? The sons want to sleep with their mothers, and the daughters want to sleep with their fathers, and they just fantasize about it. It's wish fulfillment. It's part of their psychosexual development, and you toilet train them at gunpoint in Vienna, and then they just are itching to have sex with parents, and yeah, it's not a real thing. It's a fantasy. It's what they want. They're asking for it. They want it. And then you get World War I and World War II, partly out of that betrayal. So, Freud! Yuck. Freud did the calculation, cost-benefit. But what's that bird? So I calculated the odds, but man, am I bad at math. I'm not very good at the cost-benefit thing. I manage my career like a kamikaze manages his flight path. Except I'm not even sure I hit anything sometimes. But Freud, hey, there's a lot of child rape in high places. A lot of powerful people seem to rape children 150 years ago. And he backed down and betrayed the children. Now, I've certainly made my mistakes. But I have never, ever publicly or privately backed down from a statement I know to be true. I won't do it. I won't do it. I know where that kind of betrayal leads in society. I know that if you identify wrongs, particularly those done against children, there's a collective gasp across the whole world, and billions of children the world over, in a sense, hold their breath. Oh, my God, someone's standing up for us. Fuck. Are they going to make it? Are they going to hold firm? Are they going to make it? Are they going to hold steady? Are they going to weather the storm? Yes. In that, I'm proud that I would not betray the children. I posted this on X that Google, for instance, was it Sergey Rubin? I think he shows up in the Epstein lots. But X scans Gmail for crimes against children. Hey, you know who used Gmail? Jeffrey Epstein. You ever find anything? No, but me, who stands up for children, I get deplatformed. So, the fact that present company accepted, and people who are listening to this, well, I hugely appreciate that. I mean, when I say I love you guys, I'm not kidding. Thank you so much. But as far as the world as a whole goes, I can go take a long walk off a short pier, honestly. Oh, what about all the people who are going to lose their jobs because of AI? Don't care. You know, I saw this X post, like the most followed people on X. Justin Bieber. Kim Kardashian, Selena Gomez, Cristiano Ronaldo. 700 million people. It's like warblers. Plastic surgery addicts. Warblers. And a ball kicker. You have instant access to the greatest philosophy in the history of the world. But no, Cristiano Ronaldo kicks the ball into webbing. And Kim Kardashian had her sex tape leaked by her mother and got a BBL. And collects more rings than Thanos. That's that old Jennifer Lopez goes. You can have your warblers, you can have your Kardashians, you can have your Christian Ronaldo. He's quite lean. You can have your David Beckham. Good. Enjoy. It's not particularly enlightened, ennobling, but then, you know, interest in celebrities is one of the clearest marks of low IQ. I don't care. I don't particularly care about vaccine injuries. Because instead of following people who could actually help you, you followed Kim Kardashian so that she could sell you crypto and makeup. Okay. What can I say? So, yeah, society, this is really a call out to the future, to a free society, that you need to find a way to reward the people who were right but early. There's no way right now, which is why societal progress is slowing and falling. So I don't want to be right and early anymore. Now, when I said years, like 5 years ago, I said I could explain the world in 5 minutes and everybody would know exactly what's going on, but I'm not going to. I mean, outside of these conversations, I'll be honest about this stuff, but no, it's an Atlas Shrugged situation. I'm on strike. Until society figures out how to reward the truth tellers rather than just relentlessly attack them and shame them and drive them to the public square and then pick up their ideas as if they were just self-evident. Oh, voluntary family. Oh, seems to have come from a lab. Oh, global warming is a hoax. Oh, these ideas didn't just appear out of nowhere. Oh, child abuse is at the root of political power. Oh, these didn't come out of nowhere. Like I was doing, and for those of you who are donors, and if you are not, you should be, if you don't mind. I've got almost 12 hours on the French Revolution talking about all of this. Somebody says, I don't know. Oh, this is the guy whose wife yells at him, screams at him. I don't know how to move on in a marriage in which my wife won't even take that kind of feedback. I mean, if you don't have kids, you don't have to be there. Steph, your Grokopedia article is pretty good, unlike Wikipedia. Yes, my Grokopedia article is pretty good. I agree. I'm a hot water guy. Constantly washing your hands with soap will dry out your skin. Just use some lotion, bro. Joe Rogan owes you an apology. Yeah, but I mean, he got bought. He got paid. He got the call either through his wife or directly. He got the call and take this guy out. And I've never seen him do anything like that to anyone else, right? I mean, Joe Rogan had Steve Tyler adopted some underage girl so they could transport across state lines as a groupie. And Joe Rogan has him on, no problems. But I talk about the voluntary family. He's got to take me down. My wife's entire family never apologized for being rude or wrong. For context, they spend all of their lives around CNN, sports ball, and food. What the fuck are you wasting your life with NPCs for, bro? Short life! Don't waste it on pre-scripted bullshit. Don't waste it on sports ball. And predictable conversations that aren't even really conversations. You've got 360 movement across the entire universe. Why are you on a train track straight to hell? Why are you wasting your life around volatile, stupid, predictable, boring, repetitive people? You know, I mean, studies show are pretty clear 90% of what people call decisions are just emotional reactions. They're not thinking, it's reacting, it's programming. And only 1 in 4 people have even a remote capacity to reason when they're upset. Somebody says, we're still 20 years away from their admitting any of those examples you gave. They still believe it all. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could do more to save the world, but I'm not a self-sacrificial lamb. I could do more to save the world. And I'm still working on it. I'm still, I published the book, Peaceful Parenting, blah, blah, blah. Made it free. So I'm still doing a lot, but I mean, I could do way more to save the world for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I could explain the world to itself very easily and very effectively in a way that I've never done before. But no. Why would I want, I mean, then I might as well go back to my family. Why would I want, with regards to the world, why would I want to put myself at risk for the sake of NPCs and abusers? No, thank you. I hate to be the one, says Soad, but this is where you have to believe God gives the reward. It's how I reconcile it. Yeah, but if I thought God gave the reward, I wouldn't have UPP. And you need a system of ethics that people can't will away. They can't just... The problem with, if you believe in God and virtue comes from God, then you can escape virtue by disbelieving in God. Reckon you'll make it to 90? I think I've got a pretty good shot. My blood work is excellent. My health is good. Can't you leave the controversial stuff for paid subscribers? Seems like a win-win. Right. Right, because people who hate me would never pay $5 a month to get that material. It's not a vault, bro. Yeah. Steph said he's not going to bring up new stuff. That's what I mean. New stuff is only for subscribers, and they can, if they want, bring it to the world. No, I still bring up new stuff. It's just that the final sort of putting all the pieces together, I'm not going to do. I, says someone, have been screaming about the coercive power of the state to anyone who will listen on my construction site. Oh, good for you. I mean, don't wreck your career, but good for you. The mainstream libertarian movement has really gone astray. It's like a bullshit Cato put out about immigration. Immigration is great because it drives up real estate and therefore property taxes, and therefore it's a net benefit. My God. Sick. Do you ever think about relocating? Asks someone. If you could just snap your fingers and make it so, where would you live out the rest of your life, assuming your daughter joins you? I mean, I like America very much. But it's hard. It's really hard to move. Care to comment about the recent Epstein files basically showing Bitcoin was a scheme by the rich, not the answer to fiat, as you have said before? So, yeah, I mean, the hijacking Bitcoin, I have not read that book. And my understanding is that the Bitcoin core group is running out of money. Jeffrey Epstein dropped $500,000 on them and they used it to finish the code. In the History of Philosophers, Part 4, Zeno, at 3240, you, Steph, say that gatekeepers were removed 2006 to 2016. Do you mean something specific? Yeah. Yeah, so 2006 was when I emerged onto the internet, and the gatekeepers were not there. 2016, after the victory of Trump, the gatekeepers returned. Joe did it to Owen Benjamin. Oh, is that right? Is that right? Steph, people say climate change is causing polar vortexes, which is causing cold weather down to Florida and Texas. What caused the cold spells in the past? Not polar vortexes. Yeah. I mean, the first year I came to Toronto, 1977, was an insane winter. So, right. Any other questions, comments, issues, challenges? I really do appreciate your time tonight. And hit me with the why. I'm not offended if you're not, but hit me with the why. If you find these sort of lift the lids on my history and thoughts, the sort of behind the scenes on what's going on with my general progress as a career philosopher. Bitcoin can only be hijacked by China, who more or less controls 51% of the hash rate. I don't believe that. Go to Alexandra Alexopoulos, I think it is. He was on my show, then I think he disliked me for some reason or whatever, but yeah, you can't. If you fork it, people just won't follow the fork. So, yeah, let me know. If you're interested in sort of my experience as a public intellectual. And, you know, got to tell you, pretty fucking disappointing seeing Noam Chomsky giving PR advice to Epstein on how to minimize these sex trafficking charges. I mean, I know Chomsky was a leftist and all of that. I had him on the show a couple of times, but it's pretty repulsive. I mean, Woody Allen you'd expect, but Noam Chomsky. Oof. Monstrous. I love everything you do. Thank you, Yosef. I appreciate that. In which part of America would you live? Well, I would be torn. I would be torn in Imbruglia style. So I would be torn between New Hampshire, where my people are, and Florida, where Sun people are. That's where I would be tempted. I like Florida. I mean, I love California. I mean, I've been to a lot of places in the States in business and somewhat traveling here. I love California, but I mean, it's completely mental ever since the pretend conservative Ronald Reagan gave mass amnesty and no-fault divorce to the country. So I love California. And I know Cernovich says they're like not so crazy parts of California, but I think that it's way too regulated and kind of hyper-statist. Florida is as close to the anarchic world as you could possibly get. So So I think, well, actually I traveled to the States recently to be live on someone's show. Should be coming out in a couple of weeks. I'm curious to see how the edits go. It was really, really something. Do you think there would be utility in talking to Curtis Yarvin? He's an advocate for absolute state power, but he has similar libertarian origins to you, also very historically literate. I mean, could be a good debate on political power. You remind me of a priest. I suppose second sons tend to become priests historically. It's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting. Probably have a few more F-bombs than your average priest. But all right. Well, if you're listening to this later, and thank you for your patience on X, I will sort out the audio issues. But free domain, what caused you to sprint last year? I was running with my daughter, and she's a fast runner, man. She opened up, and I just opened up too. And I was just like, poof. Like the fly, Like The Flash. Maybe not The Fly. The Flash. Yeah, it's tough. You know, one of the things that's tough with me opening up is I leave comet streaks behind me, like Superman's meteorite landing. He's a fan. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, support at freedomain.com. He can always email me and we can try and set something up. I miss debates. I was actually thinking of setting up a general debate thing. Anybody who wants to debate me to just set it up. This stuff. All right. So thank you everyone so much for a lovely, lovely evening. Such a great pleasure to chat with you all. And freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Desperately appreciated. And I will speak to donors on Sunday morning, 10 a.m. freedomain.com/call to set up a public or private call-in show with me. And shop.freedomain.com for your merch. And freedomain.com/books to check out my books. I've written almost 20. Wild. Wild man. Steph, do you recommend asking a potential therapist if they've ever worked with their hands? Yeah, just say that you need a foot massage and take it from there. Thanks, everyone. Mwah. Good night.